and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from New York City. I welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to look at how to reverse atherosclerosis, heart disease, naturally. It's our number one medical killer. And you would think that with all the good information out there, long ago, we would have been making some substantive changes. Some people have. Others have not. From Del Kiefer, what you can do, simple steps. Now, this follows on yesterday's program where I showed you how, if you're one of the 10 to 15 million Americans suffering from irregular arrhythmias or heartbeats, how you can slow it down, even normalize it by taking three specific nutrients. I'm going to follow up, do more on that today. Then how folic acid can help your eyes. This is a major 20-year study that shows what's good for the eyes. We'll also talk about how rice is better for us than what we had imagined. Anyhow, I'll give you the latest on everything health and healing. Then from our environmental segment today, we have two reports. The first is we're finally hearing from a former top oil executive who's telling us his thoughts on gas hydrofracking. Then from Martin Kaur, Global Research, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, but also another investor-based treaty, meaning they benefit, we don't, and why we should double down and go even further in telling our legislators no to any of these treaties. Then, I didn't have time yesterday, I'm hopeful to get to it today, on school privatization and the charter school controversy right now. Also, corporate America's neo-feudal assault on education. I believe we're not getting the full story. And if time permits, how predatory college loans are bankrupting the financial future of America's youth. If we're able to reach a guest in Tunisia, we're trying, not at this moment able to get her up. She is Carlotta Gall, a British journalist for the New York Times, who's covered Afghanistan and Pakistan for over a decade, longer than any Western reporter. And she was one of the Pulitzer Prize winners on the story she broke. But we're going to talk about maybe we've been looking in the wrong place when it comes to the real enemy of America. We've been looking in Afghanistan. I've said all along we should be looking in Pakistan. Let's see what she has to say about what's going on in Pakistan that we're not aware of. I think this will be interesting, again, if we're able to reach her. Let's begin. The heart is magnificent. It never rests. It never stops. Every second of every day it's beating, and that's giving our body an opportunity to take the nutrients in the blood and the oxygen to every cell in our body. But also, we don't pay attention to it. Think of how many times when people are smoking or drinking or eating, they don't think about their heart. Just yesterday, I wanted to see what concoction a person would eat on Man vs. Food, which is a very popular food show. The guy has a nice, engaging personality, and the crowds continue to grow, and it's all about if this man can consume in a short period of time, generally under an hour, a monstrous amount of food. Now, we're talking about 6 pounds of meat or pancakes or sugar. Well, quite simply, this is becoming the most popular way of eating in America for millions of people. The restaurants that these television programs are in are the most popular. You'll see people eating huge portions of barbecued ribs or hamburgers, whatever it may be. But no one asked this question, not once. Is this good for you? Is it good for your heart? your liver, your pancreas, your brain, your eyes? And the answer is no, it's not. None of it's good. Now, we may like it, but it doesn't mean it's good for us. And I did the measurements and saw that just in one single show, from one meal, this person had 2 weeks' worth of protein in one single hour. That's going to destroy his liver and his kidneys, but it's also hurting his heart, flooding the body. In the laboratory, I used to show people would come in at night what it meant when they had a milkshake for dinner, just a milkshake, nothing more, and you would show normal blood, which is a range of color from an amber to a pinkish color to it's really a dark blood, which is a toxic blood. It's a sick blood. It's lacking in oxygen. And then what it looks like after you've had ozone therapy, where it turns bright red. But then the moment you have a milkshake, an hour later, your blood, you start seeing these strings of fat. And around those strings of fat, you start seeing red blood cells gloom, clumping. And that's why a lot of people end up with a heart attack or stroke immediately after a fat meal. It's simple. If only we could see through the transparency of our skin into our blood, so everything we think and everything we do, we could see immediately the results. We would change, I believe. So here we are. We're looking at our heart. I believe when we wake up in the morning, we should think about what can I think, what can I do, what can I eat, what can I drink to honor my heart. We've known that, for example, there's a species of melon that can actually reverse signs of atherosclerosis in aging blood vessel walls, and yet we don't use it. Why? Because that melon boosts the level of a very powerful antioxidant defense system called superoxide dismutase. You probably know it by the initials SOD. For millions of Americans throughout the decades, when they've had a single 2-ounce shot of wheatgrass juice, you're getting flooded with superoxide dismutase. Even in your green compounded powders, if you look on a label and it says wheatgrass juice, you're generally getting one serving of wheatgrass juice per serving of that powder. So you're getting a lot of this. Now, a comparison of two recently published clinical trials shows that this natural supplement can not only reverse signs of atherosclerosis in human blood vessel walls, but that it did so better than the leading multi-billion-dollar statin drug. Now, if you've been in this audience for any period of time, you know that the melon I'm talking about is pomegranate, because pomegranate's actually a melon. I grow pomegranates. You can leave them on a vine for quite some time, for months, and when it starts to get a little dark, that's when you take it, you open it up, and you have all these little orbs, these hundreds of little tiny gelatinous seeds, and that's what you eat. Or you juice them, blend them, and that pomegranate can reverse atherosclerosis. It's rich in superoxide dismutase, and that can help restore the functioning of your arteries, and that's what you want. Now, why should you be concerned about atherosclerosis? First of all, they're almost never symptoms of cardiovascular disease. They're silent, and it's progressive. The older you get, by the age of 40, most people end up with atherosclerosis, which comes from the Greek meaning hard paste. It's due to chronic inflammation to the interior of the arteries. They become stiff and clogged and dysfunctional. And then you open it up and you're going to see cholesterol, cellular debris, and plaques. And that is what's going to kill you. So if you want to help yourself live a longer life and have a healthier heart, you have to start by your improving the artery lining called the endothelium from damage. You don't want that sticky fatty substance like the LDL low-density lipoproteins or the fibrinogen or triglycerides. All of that adheres to the endothelial lining, and that traps calcium, and that calcium then ruptures the wall of the artery, and that creates blood clots. Blood clots then block the flow of blood, partially or completely, and then you end up with a heart attack. You cannot be deprived of oxygen. The cardiac muscle, your heart, dies quickly, and when a blockage affects the blood supply to the brain, you're going to end up with a stroke. So damage to cells that line our arteries is critical at initiating the event of atherosclerosis that leads to a heart attack or stroke. So the delicate endothelium, remember that's the inner arterial wall, becomes weakened and doesn't allow blood to flow the way it should. So what do we do to help it? Well, wheatgrass juice, green vegetable juices, lots of pomegranate juice. That's a really good one. That's one of the best things in the world that you could possibly use. And I would also use blueberries, cherries, blackberries, raspberries, acai berries. All of these berries help improve the health of the endothelium, and that's what you want. The healthier endothelium, the freer your arteries, the thinner your blood, the less likely you are to have a heart attack or stroke and die. You can reverse it. A lot of people have. It takes a little bit of time. But remember, every time you eat something that's pro-inflammatory, you thicken it. The intima, mediated thickness, brings you closer to death. So every hot dog, every hamburger, every steak, every french fry, every pizza, every milkshake brings you closer to dying. You just don't know when. We've been told that vaccines protect us against disease. No one disputed this for a long time. Then a group of scientists, pediatricians, activists, and parents began to look at the actual literature. And what they found was shocking, that there were no true randomized double-blind placebo-controlled studies, meaning a placebo, a sugar pill, with 1,000 kids, and hepatitis B or tetanus or whatever the vaccine is, a flu vaccine, and another 1,000, and then you follow them for 3 years. No one's ever done that. It's all based upon hypothetical models, or whether a vaccine will create an antibody. But then you'll bring in all the toxicologists and immunologists who will say, the fact that you put a toxic substance to the body, yes, you're going to get an antibody, but where's the proof that antibody is specifically for that individual protective? And at what level? Some people don't get antibody reactions, yet seem to be protected. Others have lots of antibodies and are not protected. There is no actual gold standard science behind this. It's politics, money, obfuscation. So now there are millions of parents who are standing up and saying no. And there are doctors who are saying no, and nurses and pharmacists. It's growing. This is the latest reason to be concerned. This is the whooping cough, quote, evolves to beat vaccine. Medical science or medical industry? This is from Health Research Report, quote, ineffective treatments, lethal or unintended side effects. They're looking at the fact that 80% of the 2012 whooping cough cases in Australia were from a strain not covered by the vaccine. The bacterium that causes whooping cough, this form of pertussis, has changed in Australia, most likely in response to vaccine use to prevent the disease, with a possible reduced effectiveness of the vaccine as a result. And this UNSW team, led by researchers, analyzed strains of the Bordetella pertussis from across Australia and found that many strains no longer produce a key surface protein called a pertussin. About 80% of the whooping cough cases in Australia studied by the team were caused by a a different strain. And as a result, the vaccine was virtually worthless. So, let's just understand this. This was a government, the Medical Research Council of Australia. This is equivalent to their FDA. So all those people, those millions of people who got their vaccine, it didn't work because it was ineffective. So the virus is outsmarting the vaccine. That's interesting. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Emerging Infectious Disease. Did anyone in the United States hear about this? Not that I'm aware of. One more reason to question the integrity, honesty of vaccines. Here's something. We're always told which drugs to take, that they've been FDA approved, and that they're safe and effective. And hold on first. According to the latest study in Oxford University's Journal of Toxicological Sciences, a study was published that claims that only very high doses of the BPA are dangerous, and that low levels in common circulation through plastic bottles and thermal paper receipts and tin can linings and other sources are not a threat. But the study was so poorly conducted and laboratory conditions so contaminated that the findings, quote, border on scientific misconduct, according to one scientist who participated in the conference with the FDA last summer. So, is the FDA there to protect the public or shield the public from true allegiances to big industry? The people who could be poisoned are not protected. The industries that are poisoning them are. So what this tells us is this, that we have a lot of science in the United States, but a lot of it has been corrupted. And therefore, when they tell us that a chemical is safe, like genetically engineered seed, they have no good science to prove it. They have no human studies to prove it. It's based upon artificial, constructed mathematical models that the average person wouldn't understand, but those of us who want to understand science know that these are not reliable. We're also finding out-and-out fraud in science. It's rampant. It is endemic. Corruption at every level of the medical and scientific complex. And here's just one more. This is from Arthur Rosenberg from Counterpunch. Quote, deans, that's the highest standing you can have, of medical schools are now on the drug company boards. This is surprising. Quote, Waylid Gellin, MD, is both assistant professor of medicine and assistant professor of health policy, University of Pittsburgh, and a physician in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs in their Pittsburgh healthcare system. He is co-author of a recent research letter in the Journal of the American Medical Association on academic medical center leadership and pharmaceutical company boards of directors. Also, Timothy Anderson, MD, Chester Good, MD, reveals that almost all, quote, all U.S. large drug companies and 40% of all drug companies studied have leaders in academic medical centers on their boards. These drug company board members include deans, chief executive officers, department chairs, trustees at academic medical centers, schools of pharmacy officials, and university presidents. Rosenberg, quote, your recent Journal of American Medical Association paper exposes shocking industry-academic relationships many would not expect and was covered by the Associated Press and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the Wall Street Journal. What inspired you and your colleagues to investigate this? Gelland, quote, there was a lot of talk about physician conflict of interest, whether the discussion is about medical students accepting free lunches from pharmaceutical industry or physicians consulting and speaking, getting payments, becoming public with the Physicians Payment Sunshine Act, yet the issue of dual leadership, academic medical center leaders serving on pharmaceutical company boards of directors, has not really been addressed. We investigated these relationships just as shocking as academic leaders serving two masters was the sheer money involved. An average of $300,000 was paid to academic leaders or members of boards of trustees serving on drug company boards. And anyhow, goes on to talk about this group of doctors who wanted to see what was going on. Well, here's something we've noticed for a long time, that the American Medical Association has control over all 50 state medical boards, and that for over 50 years, any doctor in the United States who used any form of alternative medicine, cancer, homeopathy, heart disease, no matter what they were approaching, if they didn't use strict orthodox procedures, they were susceptible to be investigated or losing their license or even going to jail. I will never forget when I received a call from a Mrs. Privatira. I didn't know her, and she said that, could I help her? And I said, what's wrong? And she said, my husband is now working on a chain gang in Southern California with hardened criminals. And I said, what was his crime? His crime was that he educated, as a physician, he educated his patients on, if they were getting chemotherapy or radiation, how to recover their immune systems using lifestyle. He never told them not to get chemotherapy or radiation. He worked with them even after they had received it. But even helping a person who had gone through all orthodox therapy, wanted to get them healthier with nutrition by a board-certified physician, was too much of a threat. So they said that my husband had committed fraud. What was the fraud? Well, in the state of California, you're only allowed to use current scientifically accepted practices, and that's chemotherapy, radiation, surgery. Nutrition is not a part of it. What did your patients say? Well, all of the patients, every single one, over 247 patients, came to court willing to testify that my husband's advice helped them in their recovery. The judge would not allow them to testify, not one. Nor would the judge allow any of the people, the scientists, who had evidence that supporting a person's immune system when they had cancer would help them. And at no point was this about my husband saying, don't do something. He said, do it. He's not against radiation and chemotherapy or surgery. He simply believes the body also has to have its immune supported. So they found him guilty on a technicality, and later the jury said, we would never have found your husband guilty, but the judge said, if he did not practice orthodox therapy, then he engaged in fraud, and you must find him guilty. So they gave him a long sentence of hard labor. His crime? He had suggested using better nutrition after you had received your radiation and chemotherapy. And for that, in California, he was not the only one. Dr. Bruce Halstead, they also went after. And then they started spreading it out. Dr. Vance in Nevada. I remember, in fact, there's a picture of Dr. Vance. I'm working up on my farm in Stone Ridge. And one day, this real tall fella, I'm guessing he's 6'7", 6'8", comes on the property, and he comes over and he says, I hope you don't mind, I'm coming here. I said, what's the problem? He said, well, I'm being attacked. By whom? Well, the state medical board. Why? Because I'm suggesting to people who have heart disease that chelation therapy could help them, lifestyle diet could help them, exercise could help them. Well, it can. Yeah, but in my state, just like California, you can't say that. You can't treat a person, if you're a doctor, to get them well. You have to use existing therapies. And we sat there for about the better part of a half a day, and I could see the man's pain. And he said, I'm about to lose my license, and as a result, I'll lose my livelihood. And he said, I don't know what to do. I can't even find doctors who are willing to come forward. And he said, a good friend of mine, who I've given so many patients to, he's a surgeon, and he came to me the other night, and he said to Dr. Vance, he said, I feel like an eagle that's been shot through the heart with an arrow. He said, because I know that I should come to your aid. I know that you've only helped patients. I know that what you're saying is right, but I don't have the courage to lose my license, to lose my standard of living. So in disgrace, I must turn my back on you and walk away. This is what the man said. And Dr. Van says, so I have no one to help me, no one. So I said, well, I'll help you. And so I spent the next couple of days creating a strategy of what he could do. And then we were at that time working on creating a committee in New York State where we could get, and it took us almost 5 years to get a law passed that doctors who wanted to use alternative therapy with their patient's permission at least would not be attacked. And that was a landmark law that we managed to get passed. Otherwise, every doctor in New York State would have been attacked. And indeed, Harvard graduate Carl Humiston, a phenomenal doctor, great human being, lost his license. He did nothing wrong. Not a single one of the doctors I know did anything wrong. But they all lost their license. We said, you've got to go on the offensive. You've got to get to the public. Engage the public. And that's what we began, a whole national campaign. Here's how it worked. The American Medical Association was the head of a secret organization called the Department of Investigations that was in its basement. And it was run by a lawyer and a real advocate for orthodoxy only. And they had over 1 million documents. And they had a whole group of people. And if there was any popular person on nutrition, they'd destroy the reputation. If there was a doctor, they would try to isolate them and threaten them. They would have the state go after them. And one by one, they were picking these doctors off. And I remember when I got a call from not Dr. Brzezinski, but a patient of Dr. Brzezinski. And he said, I understood you helped Dr. Vance and Humiston and some others. And I said, yes. Could you help this Brzezinski? I said, who's Brzezinski? Well, he's this doctor in Houston. And what, why is he? Because they keep coming in on these fishing expeditions. They come in on a regular basis and go through all of his patient records. But they don't tell him what they're looking for, if anyone's made a complaint, what the complaint is, and they take whatever they want. And I said, well, that's illegal. So I contacted Dr. Brzezinski. I said, have you had any patients sue you? No. Are you a member of the Orthodox Museum? Yes. I said, I've published over 80 published journal papers. I get money from the Damon Runyon Fund. I'm a professor at University of Baylor. I'm an MD, PhD, went through all this. But the only difference was he wasn't suggesting chemotherapy radiation. He was suggesting antineoplastins, a different way of helping the body's chemistry take a cancer cell and bring it back into a non-cancer cell. And so I contacted the County Medical Society. And I said, is it true that you are going in with no information to the doctor and searching his files whenever you want, and taking what you want? And there was this silence. I said, you realize it goes against the state charter. I have a copy here in my hands. And then they pulled back and they stopped. And then I went down and did a whole investigation. That investigation led to a piece that won an Emmy on 2020. And I did a feature piece on Brzezinski, the first in the United States. And so what was happening is everywhere, every doctor in the United States using anything that represented alternative therapy was being attacked. The largest group of people being attacked were the chiropractors. A, because they're very bright, very innovative, cutting edge, and there's a lot more of them than any other doctor except an orthodox doctor. So they were seen as a big threat, so they were really being attacked. And I managed to get my hands on a lot of documents. Those documents were then used as a part of a major lawsuit that the AMA lost. They were found guilty of violating the Sherman Antitrust Act, restraint of trade. Their guilt was upheld to the Supreme Court, but the 11 other largest medical organizations in the United States were also found guilty, and therefore they could no longer prejudice. Suddenly overnight, now listen carefully what I'm saying, overnight, the quack organizations began to surface, and I happen to have a letter. I'm just waiting to get into court on this, by the way. I've held this letter for a long time. And the letter shows one of these quack people asking for files and the AMA complying and giving their files that they no longer could use to private groups. And then behind the scenes, these people could attack supposedly in the public interest, but really it was just carrying forward the mandate of the AMA. The AMA managed to lobby and get one of its supporters in every government position where doctors' input was necessary. So no matter where you go in doctors, to any doctor in the United States, you're going to meet an AMA compliant doctor. So what this tells us is today, between the AMA that has twice been found guilty of criminal activity and that's been upheld, it has engaged in constant lobbying on behalf of the pharmaceutical industry. It has done the wrong thing repeatedly when it comes to innovation in medicine. It was the leading sponsor of cigarettes for women. Think of how many deaths they have on their hands for that. No apologies. And yet, today, with this new report I just gave you, it shows that virtually all of academia at every level, from deans and presidents of universities, are now sitting on the boards of pharmaceutical companies and taking huge amounts of money. And doctors can get it many ways. A, they can get money by sharing in research grants, then getting the chair of a department. Let's say they get a $2 million chair of pharmacology. That's their money. They get to keep that. Then they get money for speaking, $5,000 or $10,000 a pop. Then they get free trips all over the world. You can make millions of dollars when you decide to go to the dark side. And it looks like it's not just a slow movement to the dark side. It's an all-out mad rush. So many doctors, academicians are crashing through the doors of Big Pharma with their hands open, their eyes bulging, and saying, gimme, gimme, gimme. Thank goodness some people had the courage, medical doctors, scholars, had the courage to come forward and expose it. So the next time one of these front organizations tells you that something is needed or safe or effective, it may or may not be the case. But now we know that we can't trust anyone in medicine or the government unless we do our homework and verify that what they're telling us is true based upon independent, non-affiliated quality science. And finally, extreme levels of herbicide Roundup found in food. This is from biofuels research analyst Emily Cassidy. Quote, a new study by scientists from Arctic University in Norway has detected, quote, extreme levels of Roundup, the agriculture herbicide manufactured by Monsanto, in genetically engineered soy. The study coming out of the upcoming issue of Food Chemistry looked at 31 different soybean plants on Iowa farms and compared the accumulation of pesticide and herbicide on plants in three categories. And what they found was that they found high levels of Roundup on 70% of genetically engineered soy plants. Crop scientists have genetically engineered soy to survive blasts of Roundup so farmers can spray this chemical near crops to get rid of weeds. But some so-called superweeds resistant to Roundup have developed. In turn, some farmers yet use more Roundup to try to kill those very hardy weeds. This leads to more Roundup chemicals being found on soybeans, ultimately in the food supply. And who says when Roundup contamination can be considered extreme? Monsanto itself. In 1999, the chemical giant defined an extreme level of the herbicide as 5.6 milligrams per kilogram of plant weight. Astonishingly, the Norwegian scientists found a whopping 9 milligrams of Roundup per kilogram on average. What it boils down to is this. Every time we eat genetically engineered soy, we're taking a dose of Roundup with it. This is alarming because Roundup has been found to be hazardous to human health and sometimes kills human cells. The authors conclude, quote, this study demonstrated that Roundup-ready soy may have high residue levels of glyphosate, and also that different agricultural practices may result in a markedly different nutritional composition of soybeans. Lack of data on pesticide residues in major crop plants is a serious gap of knowledge with potential consequence for human and animal health. End quote. So again, your government, without exception, across the board, USDA, the FDA will tell you, glyphosate safe, GMO safe, they're liars. They're pathological liars. We have real science on our side. They don't. Oh, but I realize they managed to get into the major positions multiple people, dozens of people who used to work for Monsanto, and other major GMO manufacturers. So in that respect, they win that level of the game. Finally, from our environmental segment today, interesting when we have someone from the inside speak out. This is the latest. This is from Lauren McCauley from Common Dreams. Quote, in a message straight from the horse's mouth, a former oil executive on Tuesday urged New York State to pass a ban on the controversial practice of hydraulic fracturing or fracking, saying, quote, it is not safe. Quote, making fracking safe is simply not possible, not with the current technology or with the inadequate regulations being proposed. This is according to Louis Alstadt, former executive vice president of Mobil. And up until his retirement, he spent 31 years at Mobil, running its marketing and refining divisions in Japan and managing Mobil's worldwide supply, trading, and transportation operations. After retiring to Cooperstown, New York, he said he began studying fracking after friends asked him if he thought it would be safe to have gas wells drilled by nearby Lake Otsego, where Albright has a home. Since that time, he's become a vocal opponent of the shale oil and gas drilling technique. Quote, now the industry will tell you that fracking has been around a long time. And while that's true, the magnitude of the modern technique is very new. And adding that a fracking well can require 100 times the water and chemicals compared to non-frack wells. He also noted that methane, up to 30 times more potent of a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, is found to be leaking from frack wells, quote, at far greater rates than were previously estimated. So it's interesting when someone from inside the industry tells you how bad one of those products are. I'm Gary Knoll, and we are not able today to get the guest we'd hope, but we will have her on an upcoming show. By the way, this is from Natural Society, Christina Sarich, quote, composing only 5% of the world's population, Americans take 50% of all pharmaceutical drugs. Quote, we consume an incredible 50% of big pharma's drugs. These drugs are meant to keep us imprisoned in poor health, not heal us. It's time to kick the drug habit, America. Tell the drug pushers Merck, Pfizer, Novartis, Roche, GlaxoSmithKline, Abbott, AstraZeneca, Amgen, Eli Lilly, Bristol-Myers Squibb, and Sanofi, along with the FDA and CDC, that you're going to go cold turkey and learn what true healing is about. Sadly, Americans are more familiar with names like Nexium, Humira, Plavix, Crestor, Imbrel, the top-selling drugs of Big Pharma, than the names like aloe vera, curcumin, alanum, and all indigenous plants that have healed millions around the world. You've likely heard the phrase before, just a dozen huge corporations are keeping Americans popping pills while they rake in billions. But have you really thought of what these numbers translate into in terms of real health? Annual sales for just one drug, Humira, $9.3 billion. That puts Abbott squarely at the top of the list of one of the most successful drug companies of all time. One drug, 12 months, $9 billion in sales. So, hard to imagine that the rest of the world hasn't given us a lesson, since we don't seem capable of learning one for ourselves. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break and come back and go to some other issues. And I'm going to open up our talkback line now so you can call in and share your points, questions, and thoughts. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And if you want to watch today's show, just go to ustream.tv and search for Gary Knoll. Also, all of our articles, and we're putting up articles every single day, and films and documentaries and calls to action, go to blog, that's B-L-O-G, .garynoll.com, blog.garynoll.com. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I am going to do one more commentary today, one on my own, plus one from Chris McAvell on school privatization and the charter school question, because I have personal experience there of a unique type that I believe we should pay attention to. Just a couple program announcements. Back to the protest, back to the street. It's time that this audience, which is the largest audience and the most proactive audience on social issues, joined together on May 4th at 34th Street and 11th Avenue at noon. That's right across from the Jacob Javits Convention Center, because we're going to stop psychiatric assault. Let's protest the American Psychiatric Association. I'll be a keynote. I'm asking people to come and join so many people who have been victims of the mental health fiasco field, who've been forced, drugged, electroshocked, held in restraint, and there's been child kidnapping, massive sexual assault, and yet they've gotten away with it. It's time that we said no. So join Mind Freedom New York. I'll be there, and I know many of you will also, because you're concerned about the rights of others. May 4th, put it on your calendar now, noon, 34th and 12th, or 34th and 11th, and let's protest. Also tonight, I'm looking forward to this, it's the annual Planet Heart. It's there to celebrate World Peace, Earth Day. There'll be lots of speakers. I'll be speaking at 8:15 to 9 o'clock. But it starts at 5, goes to 10, I believe. So there'll be music and refreshments. But call to get information. It's at 230 West 29th Street. 230 West 29th Street between 7th and 8th. I'll see you there tonight. And the number to call for information is 212-222-5432. 212-222-5432. I wasn't able to attend last year because I was out filming. And tomorrow, I'm going to be filming all day down in Camden, New Jersey. 3 years after I originally filmed that. And then on the way back, I'm stopping at a tent city. And I filmed there 2 years ago to see what progress has been made, what their plights are, who the new people are, how they're coping, and the message they would like to share with people. Now, I generally do not invite the public to join me because my days when I'm out filming are long, but people want to see how it's done, you're welcome. But keep in mind, Camden's a dangerous place. There'll be no security, no protection. We're going right into the drug neighborhood, the gang neighborhood. I'll be going right into gang territory tomorrow and interviewing gang members. You know, they don't know it. They'll only know it when they see me walking up with my camera to talk with them. So it'll be an interesting day. But if you're a person of weak of heart, do not think about coming. This will be a roller coaster. You won't be able to buckle up tight enough. But those of you who want to see the results, you'll see it this summer in a film that I'll be sharing with you. Let's say hello to Alan from Brooklyn. We'll take a few calls before I do my commentary. Hi, Alan. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it very much. A few days ago, I believe it was April 17th, you had mentioned a Chinese herb, SBEL1, for hepatitis sufferers. And I've been trying to contact, I've made about 20 calls to traditional Chinese herbalists, and no one seems to know what I'm talking about. Could you be a little more specific?
That is the chemical name of the herb, and that's what it's known as. But also I said that it's not going to be found easily. What you should do is you should write it down, go up on Medline, and get the actual study, because all the studies that I cite are posted each day. That's why I say if you go to blog.garynull.com, you'll see all the articles, dozens and dozens of articles. You can read it for yourself. And sometimes I show you what's happening that is promising research even before something's commonly available. But it's coming. It has too much positive input not to be out on the market. And you'll probably have to go through one of the compounding pharmacies to see if they can't get it from China. That's where you'll probably end up having to get it. All right? Good luck to you there. And let's say hello to David from New Rochelle. Hi, David.
Vaccines. I got a magazine here. You probably get it. Science News. I guess you also get New Scientist. If you don't, you should get them. But anyway, Science News, April 19, 2014, just recent, on page 22, talks about a vaccine, two vaccines for whooping cough. And it says that the old vaccine really worked, and they got a new one that's not live, and people are getting whooping cough all over the place. So here's at least one vaccine that seems to work. Most of them probably don't and make just money for people, but here's one that seems to work.
We don't know that, David. All we know is what they tell us, and that's what they tell us all the time. What you do, you take a step back, take out all the emotion involved, and simply ask this question. What was the gold standard by which you measured this? Was it against a different vaccine? And that's what they generally do. That's not a placebo. That's not a good standard. You have to have a group that have received no vaccines and then follow them, and a group that has had the vaccine. You also heard me talk about earlier that there was a vaccine in Australia that was found to be 80% non-effective. And these are not just non-effective, because you're putting antigens, you're putting aluminum adjuvants, you're putting neurodestructive toxins into the body. There is no such thing as a safe vaccine. It is only an artificial mathematical model. If you give a 40-pound, 4-month-old baby the same identical vaccine as a 400-pound, 40-year-old man, you're giving both the same vaccine, it's going to cause different reactions in them. They have never been tested against placebo, and it's only against the placebo then followed up before and after for a 3-year period that you will know the truth. And hence, their standards are based on mathematical models. And that's the same way almost all mathematical models are, like Gardasil. There's not a single study showing that Gardasil could prevent a cervical cancer 30 years from now. No study. It's a pure mathematical model. And hence, I don't want anyone using a mathematical model when it comes to telling us what our health should be. All right? All the best to you. Luann Panessi, your turn. Hi, Luann.
Luann? Hi, Gary. I'm here. Yep. Well, I'm getting a lot of phone calls for the June retreat. And I just want to remind everyone of two things. If you have any comments about the shows and you want to get something over to Gary, if you want me to read it on the air, by all means, email me at whnn@aol.com, whnn@aol.com. And if you're interested in the retreat, do give me a call at my home office. That number is 631-504-6198. If you get the answering machine, no worries. I will be back in touch with you, because I am getting a lot of calls, and I get in touch with everyone.
Good. Well, some of the things we're looking forward to this year, we're going to have, and I've never done this before, by the way. No, I did way back in the 1980s at the Healing Spring Ranch in Texas, but haven't since. We're going to be having herbal body wraps, Dead Sea Salt scrubs, aromatherapy mineral baths in these beautiful tubs, Vlaso and hydrotherapy, and the spa master who's doing all this, the woman who's doing all this, has the most beautiful spa you've ever seen. People are going to spend all day in the spas. Oh, wow, they look beautiful. They just are in the process of planting. I was told today some 12,000 flowers. They have a whole orchard they just planted. So there's going to be classes daily on how to start your own homestead, your own bakery, with examples how to make your own French brick oven breads, Essene breads, microgreens, edible flowers, everything that you could do in life to make a transition from where you're at to where you need to be. There'll be classes on that, counseling, going to go on, exercise, detoxing. Even I've invented an organic snow cone, because it's going to be hot. So like with cherry and pomegranate and grape and all these wonderful natural sugar-free flavors over ice that's made from spring water. That'll be cool, won't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, all kinds of cool things. So this is going to be the most fun, hip, upbeat, healing retreat ever. So if you want to join us, and it's limited, I'm limiting it to 30 people. That's it. Everybody be staying right on the property. So it's going to be wonderful. They can call you, Luann. Don't call us. Call you.
Yes, absolutely. I'm at 631-504-6198. Everybody needs to get interviewed.
Yeah, and they're always packed, and then people later say, oh, gee whiz, I should have done this. Yeah, well, now you can.
Well, you're getting a lot of new audience members. A lot of the age ranges are all over the map, so it's going to be a nice mix. We usually have a very, very nice mix of people.
Just got great people. I like the people who come. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Now, very briefly, for our Once This Week special, and I decided to do this after having a long interview. You'll see in about 2.5 weeks, I'm finishing 14 brand new projects. They'll all be done in 2 weeks. I'm not going to say more than that about them, but we've been working 20 hours a day, 7 days a week for the last 2.5-3 months to finish them. Nothing like it before. All brand new. But one of them had to do with aging. And one of the discussions was a whole hour on what I consider and what my guests consider the most important single nutrient on aging, L-carnosine. And so today, I'm going to offer what would normally be a $200 total price, and you're getting it for enormous savings. You're going to get it for $53.99. You're getting super carnosine. That's L-carnosine and acetyl L-carnitine, 60 vegan caps, 2 bottles of that, plus, and that to me is the most important nutrient you could put in your brain and in your body, but you could find out why by looking under carnosine, C-A-R-N-S-O-S-I-N-E, and this wonderful 3-hour video documentary, award-winning documentary called Age is Only a Number. I never put this on PBS. Turns out it was because it was too long. And instead, I put up How to Live Forever and Power Aging, but never Age is Only a Number. So you're getting a wonderful, insightful look at the aging process from the cellular level up. This whole package is not $200. It's $53.99. How do you get it? Simple. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 and ask for the super carnosine. 2 bottles of super carnosine. I take it every day. I take it throughout the day. If there's one nutrient above all else to make sure I put my body, it's this, plus the video that you have not seen. Age is only a number. 877-627-5065. Now to conclude our program today, I'm going to share first this view from Chris Cavell. Quote, "The privatization of schooling would produce a new, highly active and profitable industry." Milton Friedman. "American schools are in crisis. This is especially palpable in inner cities, along with the stemming from larger social and societal problems coupled with a federal policy that facilitates school disruption. The cause of the crisis has been leveled solely on teachers. On a regular basis, a largely bipartisan basis, the solution has been to fire teachers en masse. Coupling this with a massive wave of school closings, and subsequently these public schools are massively privatized, mostly in the form of charter schools. This chain of events, far from unconnected phenomena, are part of the overall project for privatizing public schools. It's an attempt at windfall profits and to overturn the centuries-long commitment of the state to free compulsory education. In other words, it's neo-feudalism. Originally focusing on the advocacy of private school vouchers, the architects of school privatization have redirected their energies to the adoption of private charter schools. Since this crucial pivot, the movement has evolved into a much larger coalition, bringing together the forces of right-wing corporatism and Wall Street Democrats, the ostensible allies of labor. It is this convergence that existentially threatens the very notion of public education in America. Couched in terms of genuine concern for children and through a sloganeering such as school choice, or even the terms as innocuous as school reform, proponents of privatization have presented themselves as the saviors of children, facing largely failing schools again due to larger societal factors and lack of school funding in many cases, sometimes deliberately withheld. Many parents look favorably at the prospect of sending their children to the private voucher or charter schools in the hopes it will provide a more viable alternative. But as the Black Agenda Report observes, quote, the charter school racket is the perfect Trojan horse for corporate domination of the classroom at public expense, opening up a new wholly subsidized educational market valued at hundreds of billions of dollars a year, in which the public pays and private parties profit. Under the guise of empowering parents and communities, it transfers public assets into private hands. Behind the scenes of the movement for the replacement of public schools with for-profit charter schools, we find legions of billionaire hedge fund hyenas, Wall Street, the same rapacious forces that brought us the world economic depression, and cynically opportunistic political operatives working at the behest of corporate and conservative foundations. These are flanked by neoliberal Wall Street Democrats and Republicans, the strongest allies of corporate America. Wall Street wants charter schools. It wants privatization because the corporate America sees a potential bonanza in profits, a multi-billion dollar opportunity to loot American schools at public expense. Indeed, as Glenn Ford notes, quote, anyone who believes that the lords of capital would finance anything that puts real power in the hands of poor parents is in need of remedial education. In addition to profits, it also affords a further opportunity to smash the remnants of labor unions in America. In a country where labor unions have been in a continually routed position for the past 40 years, under both Republicans and Democrat administrations, teachers' unions have become one of the last bastions of militant trade unionism. Privatizing or charterizing public schools continues the attenuation of labor because their proliferation eliminates teachers' unions. In fact, the original project to privatize schools, as well we shall see, held as paramount the goal of breaking the historic relationship between Black America, the most consistently progressive constituency in America, and labor unions, where Blacks were represented disproportionately with respect to their percentage of the overall American population. The project for national school privatization largely began as a parochial right-wing initiative focusing primarily on vouchers for private schools. This was a project that, if adapted, would have exacerbated America's class separation in addition to reversing the historic commitment to public education. Elite private schools could have, unlike public schools, raised tuition to price out all but the wealthiest students. This would work to cement already increasingly oligarchical tendencies in America. Moving away from this narrow right-wing initiative, the project for school privatization undertook a dramatic shift beginning in the late 1990s. For years, Republicans had tried unsuccessfully to gain legitimacy within the Black community. Republicans had manifold methods for attempting to penetrate the Black community, from running token Black Republicans to bankrolling faux Black intellectuals, all of which were ultimately unsuccessful. Hitherto, not one Black Republican had been elected to a Black district since 1939. Eventually, the right had an epiphany. It realized the cynical use of education was a method by which it could penetrate into the Black community. African Blacks, descendants of enslaved people who in their plight faced its criminalization, consider education indispensable for social mobility. Rather than directly attempt to co-opt Blacks through the Republican Party, it would make inroads by working through the Democratic Party itself, where Black America resides politically. School privatization would also potentially drive a wedge between labor and Blacks. Towards this end, it would foster and bankroll Black political operatives and opportunists in favor of school privatization. To bring this to fruition, the right-wing corporate forces created a synthetic movement for school privatization within the Black community, where heretofore such a demand never existed. This was because, in a paradoxical irony, the progenitors of privatization by way of school vouchers were white racists who opposed the integration of schools by the federal government. They wanted segregation in academia. Because of this, blacks with good reason associated vouchers with white racists. To make privatization palatable to the black community would be an arduous task indeed. But the right-wing operatives were awash with money and a newfangled strategy to work the black community. And so it started. And then it goes to where we are today, where all we see are how beneficial the black community has been made with this. I am of two minds. On the one hand, I believe that we have abandoned the black community, not necessarily the black schools. There has been a rush to the suburbs, and with that tax base, and with that the business community, and with that the quality of life within much of the area that became ghettoized. To say that we threw a lot of money at education is true. To say that we can go to Newark and show that we throw a disproportionate amount of money to public school and it still stays failed is also partially true. But that's only because you're not pulling back far enough to see the larger context in which you are putting the money. Are you putting the money into reindustrialization, into healthcare, into counseling, into guidance, into support systems? The answer is no. So if all you do is simply say, well, here is a school, but you're not looking at the child's parents, the parents' capacity to earn a living wage, have quality of life, then you're disingenuous. So I believe that we must move to have a completely new concept of what it is to get a public education in the context of where we are also empowering the entire community. That said, I do not believe that there should be an automatic, complete condemnation of charter schools. Reason. Let's take two. I will only use the example of one. Time does not permit more, and I'm running into my next program's time. There is a private charter school in Newark. It is in a very poor area. It received virtually no funding. The person spent their own life savings to bring this together and took years to do so. When they asked me would I come in and help them with their health, I agreed. And for a year, I met with them. And I agreed to meet with them only if I met with the parents also. And here's what happened at the end of a year. At the end of a year, all the parents got up, and we filmed this. And the mothers and fathers of these students were proud to say that it was their children in this school who had a sense of community, a sense of commitment, and a sense of high ideals that Verna Gray instilled in there and the faculty instilled in there, that the mothers and fathers threw out all the bad food in their homes, were exercising daily, were off most of their meds by their doctors saying they didn't need them. We saw diabetes reverse, obesity reverse, depression reverse, high blood pressure reverse, congestive heart failure reversed. I am happy to say that these young children were able to save their parents' lives. And you should have seen the room packed to the gills as each of the parents got up and talked about how their children helped in their healing process and brought them to a sense of completeness in life. And without that school, and without that commitment, without those faculty members, without the students working together, that wouldn't have been possible. So let us never think that somehow everything is yes or no. It is not. So we must also allow for the Verna Grays. We must allow for those charter schools that are not just there to make money or to be corporatized or profitized. We must also look at the quality of the education, the standards of character development that have also been developed. I spoke with over 100 of those children that night. And to each and every one, they were grateful for the opportunity they'd been given. It had changed their lives for the better. Virtually all the children, the faculty, the parents were all African American or Latino. They all were poor. Almost all were below the poverty level. So yes, there is a need to re-examine honestly, objectively, the entire system of education and stop the need of those who believe it should be privatized for profit for them and public education abandoned and made to seem as if it is unacceptable and without benefit or merit. There needs to be a new dialogue and stop demonizing those teachers, the unions, and those who have been a part of a noble educational system for a long time. I'm Gary, and all those are my thoughts. I thank you all for listening. Let's say hello to Utrece Leeds. Sorry we went a little into your program today, Utrece.
Well, today we are pausing to remember Michael Rupert. So today is a special program.
We look forward to that. We did our special on Michael on Sunday night. A longtime friend, longtime advocate, and a person whose voice we dearly miss because he would always be counted upon to stand up, step forward, to demonstrate, to speak out, and to say what was needed in that time of crisis. We look forward to your program.
Thank you.